This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of the World Wide Wave on joy.org.au.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the World Wide Wave.
Yes, it is Joy's International News and Current Affairs Show, World Wide Wave. We take you around the globe, one country at a time. Full house in the studio. Hello, Paul.
Hello.
Welcome, Damien.
Hi.
Hi, Dean.
Hey, Matt. How are you going?
It's great to be here. The LGBT community in Indonesia is under attack. Politicians are speaking out against them, religious groups are up in arms, and even the local psychiatric association has joined the chorus of anti-gay sentiment.
What is driving this current wave of negativity towards the gay community?
Although homosexuality is legal, what is the risk that it will be recriminalised?
Who has united with the gay community to defy these attacks and fight for change? For an insider's view on LGBTI life in Indonesia right now, we speak with Didi Itomo, founder and trustee of Gaya Nusantara, Indonesia's oldest LGBTI rights organisation.
Here's a taste of what's coming up tonight.
My sense is that the Islamists and the so-called New Order forces from the Suharto years are joining hands together now, and they find a common enemy that is easy, useful, weak, because for them, of the communist scare, the Red Scare, was getting to be dated and really stale. And so they're fighting back by uniting in nationalism, everything, by targeting LGBT people.
Worldwide Wrap, LGBT news from around the world, scanning the globe for stories for the diverse gay and lesbian communities, from Australia's Joy 94.9. This is the Worldwide Wrap.
This week we're starting off in Slovenia. Now, to give you a little bit of background, Slovenia had a referendum not that long ago, late last year, which was forced on the government after opponents collected nearly 50,000 signatures. The way it works over there is if you want a referendum, you just have to get a certain number of signatures and the government has to have one. Now, the actual referendum was promoted by the Catholic Church and it was to strike down an equal marriage law that had been passed by lawmakers.
Okay, so they were using this for evil, not good.
Well, from our perspective, yes. So now, not that many people actually voted in Slovenia, but as more than 20% of registered voters did vote to repeal the equal marriage law, it went out the window. So the Tasmanian backbencher who was crowing about how, for some reason, Slovenia wasn't mentioned in the media as a country that rejected same-sex marriage, the reality is that not that many people had to turn up for it to be rejected. So Erica Betts can just go take a running jump. Anyway, now, following on from that...
One of your best friends, is he?
No, just, you know, I don't think we've ever had such an uppity bunch of backbenchers, but, you know, I'm going on a tangent here.
Maybe now, they have those in Slovenia too.
Well, they probably do. So now, one thing that has happened in Slovenia that is positive, and this is the news in the last week or so, they're making an attempt to expand civil partnership rights because the same-sex marriage referendum didn't go our way. So the Slovenian Prime Minister, Miro Cerar, is giving his government support to a bill to expand the rights of same-sex couples so that they're equal to married couples in all areas except for the right to adopt and to access in vitro fertilisation technologies.
So it's one of the centrist parties that's put this forward.
Correct.
Which is, but good that the government is backing it.
That's correct. So I think Slovenia being part of the European Union, I think there's a lot of pressure on them to not go backwards. And that's pretty much, I think that's, from what I've read in the media, that seems to have a big impact. So the bill was introduced 2 days after the referendum and the government has just now signalled its support for the bill, which means it will probably be passed.
Now, over to Egypt, where I've drawn the dud controversial story. 177 inmates in a police jail have been tested for HIV after it was discovered that two HIV-positive gay men were sharing the jail with them.
Now, can I just clarify this with you, Damien?
Well, with me, hey.
Yeah. So
you're the expert on Egypt.
That's right. So with the two men, they were just in the same jail? That seems to be what it says.
They didn't actually do anything. They were just there.
They were just in the jail. So there's no suggestion that the men were having sex with other prisoners, but the authorities freaked out and ordered the transfer of the 177 prisoners to the Egyptian Ministry of Health's central laboratory so they could all be tested.
Yeah, you know why? Because quite logically, I say with tongue in cheek, it's because they were in proximity with one another, Dean.
Isn't that how obviously. HIV is spread? Honestly, give me a break.
We just have to look at each other, isn't it? Isn't that how it gets spread?
Apparently so. Look, I understand that the man on the street may not know much about HIV transmission, but you would think that the authorities would have more of an idea.
And indeed, UNAIDS is quite active in the whole Middle East area. So, yeah, I would have hoped that authorities would have
step
a
in
more
and
knowledge
have a bit
in this
of
area.
Logic to the argument. I mean, they've now said that an investigation will be held to find out why two gay men were put into the general population of the prison when they had HIV instead of being held in isolation. So,
even that is problematic. And
yeah, like. They just
much more needs to be done.
For sure. Now, moving on to Puerto Rico, where it's been a bit up and down the last week or so. Now, Puerto Rico, for those of you who don't know, is not a country. It's an unincorporated territory of the United States.
It's unincorporated. It sounds very lonely.
Well, it just means it's not a state. It's not a state, but it's kind of almost like the Commonwealth is probably the best way of explaining.
So it's under US rule.
Yeah, basically. But now
it's a state.
But I think technically it's under US protection.
Yes,
here lies the problem.
Yes, so the issue is that a USA federal judge has ruled that the US Supreme Court's decision that extended marriage rights doesn't apply to Puerto Rico because it's not a state. So the district court judge Juan Perez Jimenez, in his 10-page ruling, wrote that notwithstanding the intense political, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, because it's part of the US Commonwealth but not actually a state, it's not treated as a state for the purposes of the 14th Amendment. Now, this has caused a bit of a kerfuffle in Puerto Rico. The issue in Puerto Rico is really that, obviously, gay activists there are quite cross. Fortunately, the governor has come out and said, no, thank you. And there's a bit of background on this that we have talked about on the show, where a judge actually said that he banned same-sex marriage on the island and said it would never happen. But that got overruled because the government said they weren't going to block it, kind of like in Mexico. So, good news, bad news.
So, they're using this legality, basically, to, sidestep.
Local LGBT group Lambda Legal is going to appeal against the ruling.
And in brief, the Dutch city of Utrecht is to become the latest European city to install gay traffic lights.
Russian authorities say they've received a number of complaints for a new ad for Calvin Klein perfume CK2 due to perceived gay content in the commercial.
And in India, politicians have voted down a bill that would decriminalise gay sex for a second time in 3 months.
And that's a wrap.
That's your Worldwide Wrap. Keep up with LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like us on Facebook, Worldwide Wave, or visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
It's Romana Schlesinger from the Rainbow Pride Bratislava in Slovakia for Worldwide Wave.
Taking you around the globe, one country at a time. This is your Fun Fast Facts.
We are in Indonesia tonight, or formerly the Republic of Indonesia, according to 18th century construct. The Greek word Indos and Nesoi, meaning Indian Islands.
Well, you learn something new every
day.
Very
cryptic, isn't
it?
What I did know is that Indonesia is the world's third most populous democracy, the world's largest, this is going to be fun, archipelagic state, and the world's largest.
Just means it's made of islands.
Lots of islands.
13,500, if I remember correctly.
Oh, my Lord.
I used to work with a bunch of Indonesians, and they told me they were very proud. And it's the world's largest Muslim majority nation. That's over 256 million people spread across almost 1,000 of the islands.
So it's like 10 times the size of Australia's population. More than 10 times the size.
Yeah, there's a reason why they don't take us very seriously.
So with numbers like that, I would imagine the LGBTI population is not insignificant.
Well, that's true. If it was 1 in 10, that's a hell of a lot.
That's Australia. Hello.
That is.
The official language is Bahasa, which is a modified form of Malay, but English, Dutch and local dialects, of which the most widely spoken is Javanese, are also spoken. In fact, there's over 700 languages spoken in Indonesia.
They've had a bit of a tumultuous past in some sections. So they had a period of unruly parliamentary democracy ending in 1957 when President Sukarno declared martial law and instituted what is called a guided democracy.
Don't you love it?
Sounds a little bit fishy.
I will guide you, my people.
Isn't that just a dictatorship, but sounds a bit nicer?
Quite, yes. So now, after an abortive
marketing spin.
After an abortive coup in 1965, President Suharto ruled Indonesia from 67 until 1988 with his New Order government, which ended with riots toppling his rule in 1998. Fair and free kind of legislative elections took place in 1999, and since then it's been president after president after president.
I'm assuming the New Order wasn't the band from Germany.
Well, Indonesia has the dubious honour of being the world's largest ever kleptocracy, so more than $40 billion was stolen by their leaders, by the Suharto family, and they mysteriously never returned it.
Still down the back of the lounge. Now, being gay is not necessarily a bad thing because it is legal.
Well,
same-sex sexual relations are
I don't know if it's
illegal.
A bad thing or not, but it's just not illegal.
It's not illegal. There are not, however, anti-discrimination protection laws.
Unfortunately, on top of that, Indonesia does allow its provincial governments to establish certain Islamic-based laws, which include criminal sanctions for homosexuality. And these local penalties exist in Aceh and South Sumatra provinces, where bylaws that criminalise consensual same-sex sexual acts, as well as zina, sexual relations outside of marriage, have been passed. In Aceh, women aren't even so much allowed to show their ankles in public.
In 1982, the first gay rights interest group was established in Indonesia, called Lambda Indonesia, and other similar organisations arose in the late 80s and 90s.
Now, a survey in 2013, a whopping 93% of Indonesians polled in the survey said that society should not accept homosexuality.
Joy 94.9.
The past few months in Indonesia has seen a wave of anti-gay comment and sentiment from senior politicians, religious leaders, the media, and even the Indonesian Psychiatrist Association. Didi Utomo is the founder and trustee of Gaya Nusantara, Indonesia's oldest LGBT rights organisation. We asked Didi if he had a sense of what is driving this negativity.
A few things. One of them is actually just before this, there was the bomb in Jakarta, right? And every time there's a bomb, the Islamists always feel, or even actually some Muslims feel that, oh, you know, we're being targeted for Islamophobic statements and stuff like that. So this is actually sort of the backlash. They fight back. And this way, they look, they're a moralist, they're clean, they're good guys. So that's one. Number two, the Islamist parties have been losing votes, especially in the regional elections happening in December. So another one is happening like next year, and then there's another one. So anyway, every year there's some kind of, you know, series of elections anyway. So they're trying to recoup that. The other thing is, my sense is that the Islamists, well, the Christians are sort of tailing behind that in a more quiet way. And the sort of old so-called New Order forces from the Suharto years are joining hands together now, and they find a common enemy that is easy, useful, weak, because for them, of the communist scare, the Red Scare, was getting to be dated and really stale. That's actually putting them kind of on the spot, and so they're fighting back by uniting in nationalism, everything, by targeting LGBT people.
Some of the claims are fairly serious. Mm-hmm. Some of the religious groups are calling for the recriminalization of homosexuality, which we've seen recently in India. How serious do you take that threat?
It's really serious. I mean, the rhetoric has been around for since the 80s, actually. We inherited the criminal code of the Dutch East Indies. That was quite liberal in terms of sexuality. That was, of course, you know, kind of put together actually by Napoleon Bonaparte in the early 19th century. So, I mean, I was warned, I remember, by, my good friend, the lawyer, Nusyabandi Kata Santana, in the 90s already, that this is coming. And well, I did heed the warning, and I looked at what was happening in Parliament. But our Parliament is lazy, and there's not much money, I think, to be made by revising the criminal code, but you never know. I mean, if there's a big funder, most of our parliamentarians are corrupt. If you don't give them, like, you know, the session money, they're not going to pass the bill. Although if they find this to be convenient and useful for their purposes, they will pass it. So we take it seriously. What is encouraging is actually the resistance. There is a caucus in Parliament called the Panchasila Caucus. Panchasila is the, I don't have an idea how strong it is, but it's there. Top human rights lawyers have actually condemned the potential, well, certainly the discriminatory rhetoric and the potential human rights violations. You know, freedom of expression, certainly freedom of assembly, and you know, basically your right to life. Some people might be killed. But, you know, we have to look at this as part of a whole series of intolerance toward religious minorities, Ahmadi, Shiite Christians, and in Christian areas, Sunni Muslims, toward survivors of 65. So anybody who's marginal in Indonesia should be worried. There is talk amongst people who are more savvy about this that the next target will be women, I mean the feminists. You can already see it, you know. One flash mob, you know, 1 billion rising in Yogyakarta, I mean, against the violence against women, was attacked by some Islamist mob the other day. So this is the whole scheme of actually the old forces, ironically called the New Order, trying to take back what they lost in 98.
Buenos dias, soy Matthew Mitchum, y estáis escuchando a Joy 94.9.
Hello, Australia. This is Gabrielle from Luxembourg. From the other side of the world, we share in your fight for same-sex marriage. Good luck to everyone at Joy 94.9.
You are listening to the World Wide Wave, where tonight we are off to Indonesia. We spoke with Didi, who has been explaining the attacks on a variety of marginal groups in Indonesia, including women. There are some countries where LGBTI groups have partnered with women's groups in order to both protect the community and fight together to advance rights. We asked Didi if this was part of their strategy in Indonesia.
It's actually happening. We are actually, intersectionally, we are actually very good with women's groups, with indigenous people's groups, with in some areas with workers. I think 1st of May we'll see a large LGBTI contingent in like, you know, May Day rallies. But I think, you know, somebody wrote in the Jakarta Post the other day that the progressives or liberals are still weak. I mean, you know, I have to admit it's true. But, you know, compared to before, you know, I'm like before 98, we're a bit stronger. We're a bit more united. And actually this whole attack has united the different progressive forces.
There has been one group that stood out as being not from government and politics, which is the Indonesian psychiatric body, which has said that they would like to reclassify homosexuality as a mental disorder. That is clearly out of step with the rest of the world. What are your thoughts on that?
There's work being done in a rather small way, but with these people, you gotta work on two fronts. One front is, of course, you gotta work through psychiatrists themselves. So through psychiatrists in the national community, we are working behind the screen to actually try to stop that. The stronghold of the conservative Islamists and actually Christianists as well are in medicine. So the Ministry of Health have been sort of taken over. The second resistance to the psychiatric sort of reclassification of homosexuality and gender identity disorder is through work on religion. And we do have still a smaller number, but increasingly also vocal and visible, progressive Muslim Christian scholars and clerics who are writing. It's amazing the kind of things that they write. So, we just have to fight back.
I guess religion has a fairly significant impact on daily life in Indonesia. Mm-hmm. Is there enough voice coming from those progressives to actually help LGBT people?
Well, the problem with the progressives is this. I mean, they are still not united. There is an attempt by some theological seminars, like the one in Jakarta, by some. The Islamists, I think, are less organized. So it's there, and in terms of discourse, it's actually quite strong. The problem is that whenever the conservatives see that, for example, the theological seminary is going to hold like a meeting or something and they know about it, then they bring the thugs or the police to stop things like that. Either there'll be some threat from vigilantes or the police would say, well, we can't guarantee your safety, so you better stop.
Looking at the LGBTI community, I guess, is there a community response, a willingness for gay and lesbian people to speak up?
Yeah. I mean, again, you know, some media outlets like Compass TV, Jakarta Post, these tend to be, you know, covering both sides at least and seeing this as a debate. So it's there. And there's enough people who could speak on these issues, both from the gay, lesbian, trans women, trans men activists. The amazing thing about the response is that even in remote Kupang, this is new. I mean, you know, in the 90s, there would be a few of us and would always be Jakarta-based or Java-based. But now there's this in Kupang. So it shows that things have changed.
Now, you are one of the founders of Gaya Nusantara. Uh-huh. How did the organization start and what do you actually do?
We started small. We published a magazine, a circulation at the highest. We published 1,000, but you know, this was pre-internet, pre-dating apps. We were the dating app. You know, for our personal ads. Well, our personal ads were very, very popular. I'm just not a good businessman to actually found Grindr or Hornet or something. In the beginning, it was basically offering an alternative discourse that we are not mentally ill, that this is not a sin. Culturally, we had a long tradition of gender and sexual diversity, which is true. And then increasingly, as human rights discourse was becoming more possible, especially after 98, we picked up the human rights discourse. We were also helped by HIV work, which gave us at least some space at a table, sometimes not so available, but after 98, certainly we have space. So it's media work, advocacy, at least with policy. I don't think we're as good as our Philippine comrades. You know, they're already working with Congress. Some of us in Jakarta have done that, but it's not as intense as, for example, you know, our Philippine friends. I think in Southeast Asia, they're the most advanced.
That is Didi Utomo from Gaya Nusantara explaining what their organisation does for Indonesia's LGBTI community. It does always, as much as we hear the negative side of these stories, it does inspire me that there's people like him and his group who are out there advocating, even when they're kind of getting hit from all sides at the moment. They're still putting their hand up and saying, no, we will fight with different angles.
Sometimes hit quite literally. I liked what he said about how it's a lot of it's the negativity in the media at the moment is coming from the 1998 New Order, not at all Orwellian sounding, you know, wanting to take
back. The old guard is actually the New Order.
That's it, yeah. Wanting to take back what they've lost. So they're not happy about losing power in 1998 and they're doing what they can to get it back and
I think they should get over it by now, don't you think? It's well and truly past.
Look, Damien, $40 billion does not take you as far as it used to. And
inflation.
That's it, inflation.
They would have got interest on that by now.
Well, I think most of it's been spent on fancy clothes and limousines and nice houses and air conditioning and stuff like that. So, you know, they would like a bit more cash. And no one likes to lose power. I mean, there's no despot that shuffles off the world stage and goes, oh, I had a good run.
That's true. There was a story out this week, actually, that some of the LGBTI groups were looking at setting up safe houses because of this culture of fear that is being driven within the media. The start of this current phase, I guess, came in January this year. The Indonesian education minister, or looked after higher education, this is what he said. He was at a university. He was responding to a poster that was put up advertising counselling services for LGBTI students. So that's the context. And he says, there are standard values and moral standards to be maintained. The campus is a moral guardian. Now, I don't know. When I was at uni, I don't think it was a moral guardian at all.
It doesn't sound like any uni I've seen.
No. And this sort of caused quite an outcry and has sort of led to successive people who've then spoken up against the LGBTI community. So it's amazing what one person can do just to kick this off.
Well, like we said during Fun Fast Facts, though, there's, what, 93% of the population against homosexuality. So, you know, that's a big tide to turn.
Not so fun, fast facts, really, isn't it? It's not
a
good one.
We get those sometimes. One of his pals, the defence minister, has called the LGBTI movement modern warfare and described the movement as more dangerous than nuclear war.
Yeah, he basically said we're kind of...
Well, really?
What he was saying is that we're almost... The gay community is almost like... We're like stealth bombers. So we're kind of... sneaking in and changing
proxy
things.
War. It's a proxy war.
Proxy war. But yeah, what he's referring to is he thinks that in an underhanded way we're trying to completely engineer the downfall of a traditional Indonesian society.
If it wasn't so scary, it'd be comical. He says, it's dangerous as we can't see who our foes are. But out of the blue, everyone is brainwashed. Now the community is demanding more freedom, and that is really a threat.
Well, last week we talked
outrageous.
About... On last week's show, we talked about an article that's been in
the... Sound the alarm, Indonesian, Matt. Sound the alarm.
Last week we talked about an article that's been in the Indonesian media about how to spot a gay. Remember, Paul?
Oh, yes, the list.
It's earrings.
Well-dressed.
Earrings smell nice.
V-neck tops.
V-neck tops. Yes. That's it. So, you know, it shouldn't be that hard for them to spot the gay people trying to bring down Indonesian society.
Didn't the health minister... say that it's all down to instant noodles and milk formula.
I did read and V-neck that article.
Tops. V-neck tops.
And so I think what's underlying all this is exactly that although it seems outrageous to us from our point of view, that by and large, homosexuality is still considered a disease or it's a condition.
Disorder.
Yeah, it's a problem. Like it's that's why I think it's being framed as a threat and it's not, you know, they're just nowhere near where we're at looking at diversity. Yet Indonesia's...
But I think it's even further than that because it's quite out of step with the world. I mean, 1970-odd was when the World Health Organization took homosexuality off the list of mental disorders.
Yep.
These people are campaigning to get it put back on 30, 40 years later. In fact, the Indonesian Psychiatrist Association said, we do really care about them. What we are worried about is, if left untreated, such sexual tendencies could become commonly accepted in society.
Well, no one likes V-neck tops.
Now, I'd like to know, what basis do they make these statements on? Where in the world can they say, you know, homosexuality has gone unchecked and, oh my God, it's been like an outbreak?
I'm just going to say what I've said so many times when we've talked about African countries. Any time we become a punching bag for any government, follow the money. It's all about the money. And I think that we're a good minority to pick on because we're not going to set off car bombs or anything like that.
But we're also...
Didi was really saying that there's a whole lot of groups who've sort of seen the gay community as easy pickings.
Exactly.
But
I think
also,
he's right.
Invisible. So you can point to anyone and say they must be gay because they smell nice or they've got a V-neck jumper on. Mm-hmm. It's difficult to actually pick who is. It's easy to pick on someone when you can't. There's no face to them.
The other thing I did find interesting with what Didi was saying is the level of religious fervour within the scientific community, but particularly this one in particular. So it is quite an interesting challenge for them at Gaya Nusantara. We've got a bit more from Didi coming up as well. You're on World Wide Wave.
Want to hear more? Find out about LGBT life in over 100 countries. Download free podcasts of this show. Subscribe to iTunes or follow us on Twitter. Visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
Hi, my name is Hope Matumbu from the Multicultural Health and Support Service, and you're on Joy 94.9.
Our guest this evening was Didi Otomo from Gaya Nusantara, Indonesia's oldest LGBTI rights organisation. And we asked Didi what his hopes were for Indonesia's LGBTI community over the next 10 years or so.
Well, this wave of homo and transphobia is strengthening everyone. Our allies are infuriated, so they're out there helping us. And it is amazing when something like that happens, you know, people offering to volunteer, usually online, and that actually provides them cover. So I think we need to cash in on this and actually build a movement. We have to be realistic. It's going to be a long way because we have to work together with everyone who's working for rule of law and human rights. And that is a big piece of work, you know, together with general human rights, women's rights, women's sexual reproductive health, female circumcision, early child marriage. It's a whole slate. But it's making us better in terms of women. So I'm kind of optimistic. 10 years down the road, we'll probably be still fighting, though. So we're not that bad. I mean, I don't like comparing, but we certainly have to fight. I mean, there's no more time for complacency. And we have the people. I mean, there's about 200 organizations. And if we talk about online activists, I would count at least 10,000. Actively tweeting, writing, and we just need to educate ourselves to be better. So it's not really hope, but you know, I envision the next 10 years will be busy.
So much more to do. Didi Utomo from Gaya Nusantara in Indonesia, thank you very much for joining us on World Wide Wave.
You're welcome.
10,000 online activists. That's not a bad little pool to be able to draw from.
Yeah, that's not too bad. That's obviously some of the 7% of people in Indonesia that are supportive
of
the LGBTI community.
I think that is, it's always interesting, and we've seen in most countries that next generation, the younger generation, has more liberal views, is more open to things. And I guess the internet is part of that, being able to access different views and things online. And it, perhaps if that can be harnessed, then that's a sort of a seed of change that can allow, you know, people to get online and get the message around that.
I think you only need a small amount of people to make a lot of noise. So that's what really kicks off the change, and I think that can be said of anywhere. So as long as you've got that base from which to work from, I think we can be hopeful.
And you've certainly got an audience with 240-odd million people.
Well, it's interesting what Didi was saying earlier about how one of the problems in Indonesia is that the progressives aren't very united. There's a lot of infighting.
But of course they're not. It's an archipelago. They're very divided.
Well, not just physically, but I mean in terms of, you know, their viewpoints and their strategies. But at the same time, the conservatives are even worse. So I think that strikes me as perhaps indicating that the conservative directed opposition that's coming out at the moment in the gay community in Indonesia is perhaps not as much of a natural groundswell as we've been led to believe.
He did mention, though, that they're doing some work with women's groups, indigenous groups, and workers or the unions. And that seems to be quite a seed for change in many countries, certainly women's groups, certainly unions. The indigenous community sometimes comes up as well. So I guess bringing together the minorities that are all being beaten up, and all of a sudden you've got a much bigger group to be able to take on, and more diverse voices, so that if somebody attacks the LGBT community, then a woman's group might speak up in support. So you get that coverage, which says that, you know, you've got allies, you've got people standing beside you.
Interestingly, in my research for this show, I was reading a little bit about how the indigenous groups have more of a concept of LGBTI, and it's culturally it has currency. So it's not this foreign import, it's actually part of the culture. So it's already there.
Receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like World Wide Wave on Facebook now.
This is Tiseke Kasambala from Human Rights Watch, South Africa office, on the World Wide Wave.
A couple of messages in. One message in. Thanks, Ray, for a song suggestion. Sandiwara by Nora. Beautiful song by a beautiful lady popular in Malaysia and Indonesia. We're just having a look to see if we can find that. We have got a song plugged in for our play-out song. We'll see what we can do there. A big thank you to our interviewee tonight, Didi Utomo, from the founder and trustee of Gaya Nusantara, spoke to us from Indonesia.
All those wonderful messages we got on Facebook over the last week or so. And our Facebook page is W3Joy. All the SMSs we received, that's fantastic. And as always, the lovely Gordon at the front desk.
We will catch you next week on World Wide Wave.
Thank you for listening to the World Wide Wave podcast. We're always looking for interested guests and news tips. You can email us at worldwidewave@joy.org.au.
Great shows, great topics, great radio. Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.